Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University and is a licensed chiropractor with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School and the clinic director at the Premier Center in Santa Monica, where he treats many famous names in Hollywood under nationally recognized Premier Labs owner and CEO Dr. Robert Marshall. Got a health question? Ask Dr. Medici live today on Straight Talk on Health. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning, my friends. Today we're going to celebrate motherhood. We're going to get into the ups and downs of it, something I've experienced as a doctor very intently. Curious to me, at the turn of the century, the number one cause of death was either birthing a child or the mom died during childbirth. Interesting statistics. In the 1940s in China, that is mainland China, 9 out of 10 women died at childbirth, or 9 out of the 10 children died at childbirth. Traditionally, people would look at women, and common in the dialogue was, you know, Sally, you have childbearing hips. A woman was looked at a certain time in American history and world history as whether or not those hips would support a baby. And of course, this was so critical because this predates when we had cesareans and episiotomies, et cetera, et cetera. If the baby couldn't fit on the way out, it was either turned by a midwife, and that's an art we'll talk about later, or what happened is the woman just tore, and sometimes she tore all the way, and we'll get into that later. But the point is that mothers that birth children go through changes in their body that are enormous, and I don't think that's recognized enough, even in American society today. Well, it kind of is if I ask you the question, can you consider your daughter or granddaughter having 6 to 10 kids? Now think about that. There was a time when it was somewhat normal. My grandmother, being of Italian heritage, coming here to America in 1914, birthed a total of 10 children. 7 of those children died within the first year in Italy. And then upon transport to America on the boat, as an immigrant, like many of us, she came here and birthed 3 children. But 7 died. Think of that. Think of what a child's really about. And I hope the men are listening, because men kind of think you do it, and then all of a sudden, 9 months later, the baby appears. And what's not the case? If you really understand what a mother gives to a child, from the time the sperm meets the egg to the time that baby's 7, 8 years old, it's enormous. It is its own triple volume of inquiry and understanding. Now, the key is what we take joy in, what I take joy in, is when I can have a mom 2 years before she even wants to have a baby. If I can find a woman in her 20s or 30s, a couple of years, product of what appears to be a healthy marriage, lots of love and harmony, not a lot of stress, and take that mom 2 years before she wants to get pregnant, and we go to work on her. We clean that body from A to B, all the way to Z, everything known. I did this to Rachel. My lovely Rachel, she worked with me for 7 years. She managed the health center. She'll be back in February, hopefully, treating patients. She's not going to manage anymore. She's birthed 3 beautiful boys, all 3 of them powerhouses. And 2 of those 3, I had the wonderful opportunity of supervising. Yes, from the day she's pregnant to supervise that pregnancy. But I had a couple of years with her prior to her last 2 children to get her strong. what you watch a woman go through, what we call morning sickness. Now, this is Henry Beeler. I want to introduce a book, Henry Beeler, Food is Your Best Medicine. Famous medical doctor down in the Southland out of the 20s. Famous book, Henry Beeler, B-I-E-L-E-R, Food is Thy Best Medicine. Commentary that definitely backs up science. Very rooted in science. Morning sickness is detox. Morning sickness is the liver not being able to handle all the poisons that the mom is trying to clear for her body so they don't divert to the fetus. It's way more than hormonal shifts, way more. And even if it is hormonal shifts, to whatever extent it's hormonal shifts, it's up to the good old liver. Something, if you've listened to this show, you know much about. It's up to the good old liver to denature, transaminate, just do its alchemical magic with all those crazy hormonal shifts around pregnancy. So either way, law number one, a woman's morning sickness is nothing more than detox. And I can tell the ones that are going to go through hormonal hell during pregnancy long before they go into it. Hyperemesis. Ladies, you know what that is. Ladies, you know women who have had such a difficult time during that 9 months that they almost wanted to stop the pregnancy. And yes, sometimes for medical reasons, the hyperemesis is so bad it will threaten the life of the child, threaten the life of the mother. And sometimes you have to. But what's that all about? Whether you've had morning sickness for 4 weeks or you've had it for 9 months, it relates to your liver's ability to pull out the poisons. So if a woman's got a weak liver, and that's a whole other conversation, if she's not strong in the liver, she's going to have a tougher time. If she's extraordinarily toxic, if she's coming off years of drugs and typical American lifestyles, you know, there's a reason most women today would cringe at the thought of 8 to 10 kids. Not all, but most. I mean, it's inconceivable. You look at young women today go through one child, let alone that discussion. I was in a store the other day and speaking to the store owner who I've known for 10 years, and she was really, in a sense, beside herself because her 22-year-old can't get pregnant. And what was the reason? Endometriosis. But that was the reason that just in that conversation I understood. Endometriosis is a product of severe hormonal imbalance whereby you actually grow uterine tissue outside the uterus. And it's indicative of grave hormonal imbalance. But the topper to the story is that the woman didn't even understand that the reason that her child was having such a difficult time was the endometriosis. Because the child had had endometriosis and she was on the birth control pill years ago, since she was 16 years old. So I'm talking to a mom in a store. She's beside herself because her newly married child can't get pregnant. And no one, including the MD, and these people get good health care, are making the connection between the endometriosis and the problem with getting pregnant. That's all over the place today. Bone structure. That'll sound like it's coming from left field, I know. But you know what we're making more of than ever today? And it relates to the lack of fertility in the soil. We're making weaker kids. I know that's going to get some people upset. But that's what's happening. How are we not going to pay the price for such poorly fertilized soil? Now, that evidence is mounting and clearly points to that reality. So you're feeding from what's in your breast milk to what's in your genes. You're feeding your system inferior quality food, not to mention air, not to mention water, not to mention every other thing that 35 shows have talked about. And so what do we birth? We birth children, and they are smaller in the bone structure, the jaws, are not as wide and thick. The bones are not as sturdy. Narrow heads. You know what a narrow head is at birth? It's a weaker baby. You know what a narrow head is in the population? It's a weaker person. If you study the medical anthropology and you dare to go back 100, 200 years ago and you look at the faces, everyone looks like a pit bull. Think about it. Think about grandpa, grandma, the ones that came here, the ones that went through the Depression. They're barely around today, but they're still around. Think of your memories. If you're over the age of 50, think of your memories of your great-grandparents. Tough, thick, strong. Bones, powerful. The bone is the health of the child. The bone represents the fertility of the soil. The bone represents the fertility of the parents. And the bone is manifesting in narrower hips. We're not making as many women with childbearing hips. In fact, what's very interesting is childbearing hips are not quite the aesthetic landmark anymore. The full-bodied woman has fallen out of favor. Obviously, how can that be argued? Perhaps not pleasant to hear, but how can that be argued when your average model, pick up your magazines from Vanity Fair across the board, it's the female with the narrow hips. That's the model. So what's that telling our children? Small, tight hips are what it's all about. We don't need to get into whatever that's all about. But the bottom line is for birthing children, those hips don't work. You've got to have a lot of other skills to birth children when those hips are that narrow. And traditionally, over the years, 200 years ago, before you married, your grandmother would come up to you and say, you know, I know you're in love, but those hips ain't going to bear kids. And that's the way people thought. They understood it from the farm. They understood it in the language of their culture. Fascinating. And fascinating to understand that the bone structures are narrowing every decade in America. If you can't get pregnant, if you can't hold the baby, you're talking about a couple of different insights. If you can't get pregnant, it means, now this is the man aside, and of course you test the sperm. This is something very difficult for families to do. How dare it be that the male sperm isn't capable of fertilizing the egg? So the last place we look is to the male. But that's the first place you should look, because that's the easy one. There's lots of reasons sperm doesn't work, including the fact that testicles today sit on motorized apparatuses all day, from the hot seat of the car right along to the computer, to the hard drive next to the knees, so on and so forth. And what does it do? It sends radiation into the testicles, and it decreases the sperm count. Well, that can't be argued either. We've got the stats on that. We're making about half as much sperm as we did 60, 70, 80 years ago. What does that mean? That means you've got half as many. An ejaculate should have 400 or 500 million sperm. Maybe today it has a couple of hundred or 150 million. And you're in your 20s or 30s and you're shooting 150 million and it should be 400 million. Not to mention morphology varies off. In other words, the sperm doesn't look like a sperm, or the sperm doesn't know how to swim. That's another show at another time. But if you're having trouble getting pregnant, you look at the male first. After that, the female. You go to the doctors, and the doctors don't really have answers. So we go to in vitro, we go to Clomid, we go to Pergonol, all these different things. Do not do that. Please do not do that. I was with a woman years ago. I don't mean with a woman. I accompanied a woman to a gentleman's office. His name was Dr. Val Darvajan. Dr. Darvajan was one of the minds behind Clomid. He was a wonderful man, a wonderful, loving doctor. And he was very sincere, and he was very, very passionate about what he did. And you could feel the love just radiate from this man. And he was a classically trained medical doctor. He was one of the inventors of Clomid. Clomid, if you don't know, is the drug that you give women so that they ovulate more. So instead of dropping one egg per ovulation, I should say per cycle, they drop five eggs or seven eggs. So it increases, theoretically, the chance that the female will get pregnant. And the woman that I had accompanied thought she had been counseled to take the Clomid 6 months when it was only 4 months. And when Darvishan found this out, that she had taken the Clomid 6 months instead of four straight months, I watched him drop his head on the desk as if about to cry. He was literally shaken. And there was a reason. Clomid's dangerous. And he knew it. Just like Pergonol is dangerous. Just like in vitro is dangerous. But we don't care because we're going to have that baby. Understood, not argued. And in that sense, I think these things are a blessing. But they are costly. Costly. When some of the basic concepts, some of the fundamental drivers behind getting pregnant can be understood, and you'll understand much more before this show is over today, are not employed, and people go straight to Clomid, straight to Pergonol, straight to in vitro. Cost-benefit, when you have easier solutions, this is the travesty. This is the travesty I address. If you can't get pregnant, the first thing you needed to do is understand your period, your menstrual cycle. Yes, that menstrual cycle that you can't wait to end in menopause. And lots of people look like that. Today we have this notion that you can take a pill or a patch. Now it's not even the birth control pill, which has a long, dangerous history. You can take a patch. Now you don't have to take the pill. Well, pretty soon, maybe you can just wear a red dress. And then you'll be birth control. Point is, no matter how you mess with the hormonal cycle of a female, you are going to create damage. What damage? What damage does the birth control pill do? And what's a healthy period about? Very important. Number one, when women can't get pregnant, if their period is clotty, if they have back pain, if they have PMS, if they have bad mood swings, if they have a tendency towards endometriosis, if they have a tendency towards cystic ovaries, if in their family their moms had fibroids, if they have a tendency towards cystic breasts, if they've done the birth control pill in the past, then what happens, and I cite the book, What Your Doctor May Not Tell You About Premenopause. What Your Doctor May Not Tell You About Premenopause, that's John Lee, a man that gave his life and even his license to the education of young women as to how to gestate correctly, how to get pregnant, how to stay off the birth control pill, how to understand your cycle. If a woman can't get pregnant, very often, if that period is difficult or related to all those other things I just mentioned, cystic ovaries, etc., she suffers from blood stasis. Blood stasis. Blood congestion, liver blood stasis. Yes, you can't go to your medical doctor and tell him that. He's not going to understand that. Just like we didn't understand cigarettes were dangerous in the 60s, and many hysterectomies are done unnecessarily, and a whole host of things we didn't understand and don't understand. Right now, the word blood stasis hasn't made it into the medical model yet, and probably never will. I cite that as a deficiency in medical education, and I don't mean, okay, holistic medicine. I don't mean Chinese medicine. I mean hard science. We should understand that the liver thins the blood. That is a function of it. It is in the textbooks. It is in the physiologies. And when the liver congests, it slows down the rate of blood turnover. So blood congests. When blood congests, the body lays down fibrin. And the fibrin, in a sense, clots the blood. No better place do we see this happen every single month than with the woman's cycle. Now, once we have blood stasis, we are giving up, we are conceding that our liver cannot do another vital function of the liver, and that is to take the basic cholesterol and the basic steroid, of which all hormones, almost all hormones, are based from, and cleave, cut off parts of one hormone to make a different hormone. In other words, whether you've got cortisol or estrogen or progesterone circulating around in your body, they're all coming off the same steroidal base, the same hormonal substructure. And it's up to the liver to look at the blood, and it's up to the brain to look at the blood and decide which of these circulating hormones needs to get out of circulation and which of those hormones needs to get transformed in the liver and go back into circulation. That's fascinating. To me, that's fascinating. To science, that should be fascinating. To medical doctors, it is barely understood. It's not even remembered. Because if it was, then they would understand why an estrogen-dominant female, some female who makes, by her genetic code, a lot of estrogen. If you are African-American and you are listening to this show and your periods are just really off the chart bad, you're almost passing out and you can't get pregnant, this is you. That's just a stereotype, a great example. But anybody, from an African-American to someone from Scandinavia, can be estrogen-dominant. And if you add all the toxic estrogens from the environment and you add that to someone that's already full-bodied and puffing with estrogen, you create the estrogen bomb. And that estrogen has to be handled in the liver. It has to be balanced out in the liver. The conversions must occur in the liver. When the liver is pooped out because it's so stressed, you can't go through the hormonal configurations to get pregnant and to sustain the baby. Really, it's to sustain the baby. Usually women like that, sperm meets egg and it starts, but it just doesn't take. It doesn't take. It doesn't hold to the sheath of the uterus. Blood stasis, first problem. Second problem, blood deficiency. I'm going to create a stereotype, and then you guys fill it in as closely as you can as it might relate to you. Number one, you're a vegan. You're a vegetarian. You're a Vata, V-A-T as in Thomas A, meaning you're long and slender and your hips are small. And you're kind of on that delicate side, that fragile side. Already, you were coming into the world deficient. And you may have chosen, for highly sophisticated reasons, for perhaps a high sense of spirituality, that you're not going to eat animal products. And so you take your deficient, inherently deficient body, your exquisitely delicate, sophisticated body, and you deny yourself fertilizing foods. And you do that a period of years, and then add to that everything else in life, and you are too deficient to get pregnant. That's deficiency, blood deficiency. The other one's blood stasis. Those are two different things. They should be in the American vernacular. People should be looking at each other. Certainly, prospective moms thinking about birthing healthy children should know if they're the estrogen dominant type that gets congested in the blood, meaning the periods from hell, or you're blood deficient. You're that rather fragile type, delicate, precocious, slender, and you may not even be having your period. Your period may be a day or two, and it's done. Or sometimes you skip periods. How many athletes don't get pregnant? Or how many former athletes don't get pregnant because they're body fat? I had one 2 years ago like that. Been everywhere, done everything. Just not making hormone. Her body fat was 10%. How can that slip through medicine? It does all the time. You need some fat on those bones. But what do we exalt in American culture? You have to be anorexic in your figure, or you can't be a model. And if you are a model, or you're a movie star, and I know this from lots of experience in the film industry, I've had many actresses in my office, and they are under constant duress by their agents, etc., to drop weight. They're already at 14% body fat, and their agent wants them to get even more anorexic. This is insanity. It is sheer insanity. But that's the model of the culture today. Now, it wasn't always that way. Before we had cesareans and episiotomies, before we had in vitro, before we had these alternatives, if you had a culture, this is so fascinating. You got to understand the social history here. Before we had cesareans, before we had the episiotomy, before we had in vitro fertilization, before we had Clomid, before we had Pergonol, before we had all these birth tricks, 200 years ago, if you had a farm and you got married and you had a plot of land, you needed 10 kids. It's the way you did it. It's what you had to do to survive. And women that looked like Twiggy, that classic model figure, those women didn't make it. Therefore, they were not in demand. They had a problem. They did. They suffered. They tore. They got hurt. They died. Their children died. And the public understood that. The vernacular of the farmer understood this and looked at women like that. And before you married one like that, what could that mean to you? As a male, if you inherited a farm and that farm needed children and you were to marry and fall in love with a woman like that, you would be counseled against that on certain levels. Fascinating. So I'm not saying that we've made a mistake. I'm saying that society's changed. It's very interesting how our aesthetics have changed. But what it comes down to then is if you're the model type, whether you're 4'10" or 6'2", think about deficiency. If you've been anemic, if you're an O blood, O as in Oscar, if you're an O blood and you tend to run anemic and you've been a vegan or a vegetarian, don't do that. At least fix the anemia. That a woman can walk around with her hemoglobin at 10 or 11, or that they test it in the middle of the month, not after the period, when you can have as much range as 1 to 2 points in your hemoglobin. We didn't even test it right. But if you're an O blood especially, if you are of the Vata dosha, in other words, the model, and you've decided for high spiritual reasons to go vegan or vegetarian, you don't eat animal protein, and you run anemic, this is a big, big, big problem. If you are an estrogen-dominant female, meaning you're not a vegan, or if you are a vegan, you still pack on a good 10, 15 pounds of meat on the bone with ease, and your tendency will be to go the other way, but your periods are painful. You're blood static rather than blood deficient. And number three, and this counts, is we are building a weaker society today. Yes, if we isolate Rachel's beautiful child, Ty, who managed my health center down there, we cleansed her for 2 years. And when Ty was born, we knew we had a little Godzilla, and we did and do. This kid is immaculate. He is a powerhouse. So we can do that. We have all the tools. But by and large, on the overall, that's not what's happening across the board for reasons stated. And what that means then is when sperm is meeting egg, neither sperm nor egg bring the power to the pregnation. They don't bring the power. Without that power, there is an inherent weakness. The electrical field that drives the pregnancy, product of sperm and egg, is deficient. So you got three reasons to look at fertility issues: blood stasis, blood deficiency, and deficiency of Jing. J-I-N-G. I'll use that word from Eastern medicine because it's so appropriate here. The mom and the dad grew up on McDonald's, and what they're putting in their sperm and in their egg is deficient. Yes, I'm talking about genetic weakness. Three things. You should understand your cycle as a woman. The man should understand the cycle. You should be able to get pregnant when you want to get pregnant, and you should be able not to get pregnant when you don't want to get pregnant. How many people, how many men understand what fertile mucus looks like? How many women understand what fertile mucus looks like? When you count your cycle, the first day you bleed, we call day one. Men, listen. The first day the woman bleeds is day one, to day two, to day three, to day four, to day five, to day six. Somewhere around day 12, day 11, day 13, day 14, day 15, somewhere around there, the egg will drop into the uterus. And it's capable of being fertilized only about 12 to 16 hours. Once it drops into the uterus, it sits there waiting for sperm. What's tricky is that sperm can be in the female 5 days earlier. The sperm can stay alive in the female 5 days before her ovulation. 5 days before that egg is hanging out in the uterus waiting to receive the sperm can be hanging out somewhere in the cervix for a good 5 days. So if a woman were to ovulate on day 12, from day 7 on, if you don't want to get pregnant, there shouldn't be sperm hanging out in that cervix. Now, you can track all of this, all right? There's a great book called Taking Charge of Your Fertility by Tony Westler. W as in when, E as in elephant, S-C-H-L-E-R. It'll be on the website. The Medici Library, we'll stop here for a second, is started today. I'm not sure how I'm going to evolve it quite yet, but what I'm going to do with it is put in manuscript fashion all the articles and all the book reviews that I'll do on the books and the essence paragraphs from all the books that I think represent the inside track in medicine. But as I've said before in prior shows, this is not for data accumulation. You want data accumulation, go to somebody else's website. You see, for me, product of 22 years of study, it's all come down to a couple of paragraphs in a book, and then thousands and thousands of books, hundreds of hours of study. And cumulatively speaking, every now and then somebody puts some piece of gold into your ear. Well, that's what my library is about. The Medici Library is dedicated to the inside track, not data accumulation. This show, my school, the Medici Institute, and now my library are not about data accumulation. I want you, the public, and I am talking to you. If you sign into my website once, it ought to be 100 times, because you're not going to get what you need to get listening to these shows once. They're not designed for that. But I thoroughly believe that you are ready for the upgrade, and thus the education. But education comes down to time and money. And time and money come down to how fast can we get you the essence. So the Medici Library is an essence library, just like the show is for essences. Taking Charge of Your Fertility by Tony Westler, W-E-S-C-H-L-E-R. Get the book. You don't have to go on the birth control pill. And today there are specialized forms of cervical caps. The European cervical cap, it's been around for years. It is about 100% effective. And they're tough to get in America, but you can do that. I'm not talking about the commonplace American cervical cap. I'm talking about a special European model. Get on the internet, on the websites, and look it up. Within a week or so, I'll have a link to my website so you can learn more about this. Specialized cervical caps and the rhythm method, meaning as that book, Taking Charge of Your Fertility, will teach you. If you are not having intercourse, if you don't want to get pregnant, if a husband and wife are newly married and they're in their 20s and they want to wait 7 or 8 years to straighten out the finances, get ready for the children, save for college, the whole thing. Once you're married, you want not to go on the birth control pill. Don't do that. And don't put unnecessary pressure in your life because you're birthing 2 or 3 children in your 20s and you wanted to wait till you were 30. Don't do that either. Get educated. The first thing that has to happen is the female's hormonal cycle has to become regular, 28 to 30 days. And someone needs to figure that out, whether it's me or anybody else. Get it figured out. And once that's done, then from the first day you bleed to the 6th or 7th day, it's a green light. After day 7, if you're ovulating day 12, and in the book it'll teach you how to figure this out with the thermometer, and by seeing the cervical mucus, the fertile mucus. So both husband and wife can understand what that looks like. And once you start seeing it, you know you're in the zone. So you either refrain or figure something else out. But from day 7, say if you ovulate day 12, to day 14, generally 1 week out of every month, you have to practice some alternative method, whether it's abstinence or the cervical cap or the man pulls out, so on and so forth. That works. People that get that down have over 99.5% compliance. You just don't get your significant other pregnant. So we have an alternative if we want to listen to our bodies, and that's what America is not doing. How many women in their 20s know when they're ovulating? How many know when they're ovulating? Not enough. Do you know which side you're ovulating on? Do you know what cervical mucus looks like? Does the man understand all of these things? Can the man feel when he's inside you that you are becoming more fertile? Can he tell? All these things are possible. All these things are obligatory. And all these things are part of a mastery of birth control. Again, education. Okay, the sperm hit the egg. And there's this explosion of energy unlike anything. It's not any different than the birth of a galaxy. The growth from day 1. Already at 3 weeks, your entire brain and spinal cord and heart and circulation is formed. Was the mother ready? Was she ready? Not if she's stuck in the gallbladder. Not if she's deficient. Not if she's stressed. Not if she's exposed to radiation. Not if her diet isn't immaculate. She's not ready. So if you really want to make an investment in a healthy family, which saves you time, money, and energy, nothing is more devastating than birthing a child. And it just didn't work correctly. You can chalk it off to God, so on and so forth, and I understand that totally. But education is a way to birth healthy children. And once sperm meets egg, the nutrients need to be there already. What the body will do is try to pull the poisons out of the mother, and she'll get sick if she can't do it fast enough. But there is much dumping of the garbage in the mom into the fetus. A great down-to-earth layman's book to all of this, I think, written in just from a man that knew, because he did. He didn't theorize in libraries and academics. Was Henry Beeler's book, Food is Your Best Medicine. Go to the part on child rearing. It'll blow your mind. Cheap book, $5.95. pioneering nutrition classic, they call it. Certainly it was. Beeler treated everyone in Hollywood. He was highly esteemed, down to earth. He was a food healer. He didn't even use herbs. He used food. Get the book. Look at what it says. And in my clinical experience, and from my understanding of science, I would concur completely that the mother will dump its garbage into the baby. So the baby eats garbage for 9 months. The baby will be born with colic. And then, God forbid, we don't breastfeed. You've heard enough of that on Dr. Marshall's show. I'll leave that alone. Just understand, if you're going to have the milk, more than hydration, did you have the sufficient strength to build the milk? Did you have the reserve? How many women, by the time it's the second kid, they just can't produce milk anymore? That's the diet. That's your attunement to health. And where you're lacking is where that milk will not drip. So the little baby comes into the world. And one, it's eating all the poison in the mother for 2 years, even if the mother can get pregnant or hold pregnancy. And after that, the child's born. It's already in a difficult state. And then we add to that that we don't breastfeed it, or the mother can't put out the milk. You bought yourself a bigger problem then, with all the love. But let me tell you this, no matter what I say, and remember this, it's paramount to this show. I have seen kids that should have come out of the womb and just jumped off a cliff. Pardon the French, but they have been so compromised in the womb. Husbands beating the hell out of the wives for 9 months. Mothers thinking they never should have had the kid. Kids born with the cord around their neck. Kids born breech. Premature. I mean, stuff that's just mind-boggling. And I have seen a mother's love so that by the time that kid is 3-4 years old, the child's basically cleansed all of it out of their body. So no matter what I'm talking about, don't think that love doesn't cure all, because it does. I've seen that. You know, Rachel cleared me to say this. Her first son, Jake, was born with the birth cord around its neck. Okay? Happens to a lot of kids. The cord is around the neck. So an emergency cesarean was done. And when I knew her little son, for the first year or two, Jake, when he would get upset, would go blue. Blue baby. You know the terms, ladies. The baby would go blue. When he got pissed off at something, like during the terrible twos, he would hyperventilate and he'd go blue. What was he doing? Catch this. What he was doing is replaying the birth trauma. That's what kids do. Some of you can relate to that. He was replaying the birth trauma. That's what kids do. So that cord around the neck, 2 years later, when the kid got upset, it triggered the same response, and he'd go blue. I watched her love and the relationship with that little man balance him out so that by the time he was 5-6 years old, there was no sign of it in his body. He purred like a cat to touch. You could adjust and structurally manipulate his body. It was all gone. The basic inherent terror of being brought into the world with a cord around your neck was already triumphed. That's what love can do. And here's to you, Rachel, for being the mom that you are to all three of your boys. But my point is that I'm going to hit you hard this show to understand all the things that do happen, that you deal with. Just remember, love can cure all. But here's this child now brought into the world, and hopefully it's breastfed. Hopefully it was birthed without a snag, which can be the cord around the neck, which can be a premature birth, which can mean a difficult labor, which can be an emergency cesarean. If you're listening to this show, don't think that these things are just, they happen and that's it. They stick with the kid. No one understood this better than a medical doctor named Bernard Bell. Dr. Bell, who's alive today, in his 90s, still in practice, a psychiatrist, a Freudian, or I should say post-Freudian, but a medical doctor with much experience that understood that what that child is starts in the womb. the child is forming in the womb, its personality, its ability to hold to the stress it receives begins in the womb. And you have to honor that. You have to honor that big statement. Because otherwise you don't think then that your toxicity affects the child. You think nature's taken care of it. Well, nature has taken care of it. Nature's had thousands and thousands of years to take care of it. But what have we done in the last 100 years? The last 100 years have put stresses on systems that have taken thousands and thousands of years to evolve. That baby is born, and just as it's going to have a toxicological imprint, it's going to have a structural imprint. Lamaze, the Lamaze episodes, tried to teach the mom to do what? To breathe, to birth the child with ease, to squat and have it pop out in 20 minutes with no issues, no way. To do that, to master Lamaze, really meant to master the autonomic nervous system, to learn to relax. And where you don't learn to relax, ladies, is where you want to have a midwife. Go find one that's birthed hundreds of kids. At one of my schools, when people come in, young people, and they want to study midwifery and start to develop relationships, I support that so much. If you haven't gotten pregnant or you've just gotten pregnant, find a midwife. Because she'll put you through, hopefully, the ringer to get you educated to the point where you can birth easily. But to do that, you have to learn to relax. And that was the Lamaze breath. But in the context of our shows, what we're really talking about is not relaxation. We've got better words for it. It's called autonomic balance. The ability to incite the parasympathetic nerve centers, so that the pelvis understands how to let go. And even before birth, that a woman is in a state where the pelvis has a flow to it. And that flow for many women is not there because they've held rigidly in the pelvic area long before they ever got pregnant. Birthing a healthy child is like a dance. The pelvic area, the uterus, is moving, it's dancing. And once impregnated, as the fetus grows, the fetus is dancing. And all the thoughts the mother thinks, and all the foods the mother eats, and all the sounds the mother makes, is in reciprocity with the child. And when that child's about to pop out, it's the continuation or the intensification of that dance that allows the cervix to dilate, that allows the bones to separate, that allows the mother to supervise the flow down the vaginal canal. That's essentially what Lamaze was about. But Lamaze is competing with a culture today that's running contrary to that dance in so many ways. So, number one, long before you get pregnant, you cleanse. You cleanse the liver. You look at the 35 shows on my website and do everything. You throw more into your health portfolio. Do that. Don't think you can get away with that. If you can't get pregnant, look at hormonal imbalance. Look at hormonal deficiency. Look at genetic deficiency. Understand the ramifications of the birth control pill. They are serious and dangerous, and all that toxic and estrogen, it will bring you problems from cystic ovaries to fibroids to cancers down the line. And do not listen to anything contrary to that. Read the literature that suspects the pill still to this day. Not the 1970s pill that's been altered and toned down. Not the pill that we understood in the 70s as causing a 1,500% increase in uterine cancer in the 70s. Not that pill. The new ones, like the patches, that are not supposed to be dangerous, that still are. Respect your cycle. Understand it. You and your partner understand when you're ovulating, which side you're ovulating, what the cervical mucus looks like. Use the fertility method. Don't go on the birth control pill. And understand that once you are impregnated, all right, that if you have all that reserve built, Junior's going to get nourished instead of what? Infused with all the garbage you didn't get out of your body that you could have gotten out of your body. And therefore, if that's not what happens, when Junior's born, he's going to be colicky. He's going to be pissed off. He's going to be irritated. He's not going to be as strong. He's going to be more challenged. And then if you haven't mastered the autonomic nervous system, if your body doesn't know how to dance and relax in the deep physiological sense, not, oh, yes, I took multiple vacations in the 9 months I was pregnant. I didn't work. I just stayed home and watched TV, and I really took care of myself. Well, that's a nice step, but that's not what I'm talking about. That's not what you're taking your time to listen to today. I'm talking about a word, a mastery of the neurological system that many of you don't even understand. And yet, it's everything that Lamaze was about. To be able to relax to the point where you feel a shift in your physiology. So that that baby is born, and it's born with minimal structural and emotional damage, meaning cesareans, episiotomies, very long labors. We want that 20 minutes, and we pop it out. And understand, if you've got small hips, and you fit any one of those descriptions, you are going to be challenged. And don't take the easy way out, because it will cost you in the long run. Right now, in the New England Journal of Medicine, there are articles telling you that episiotomies are to be done only when they must be done, because there are side effects to them that you've heard so much about on Dr. Marshall's show and so much about on my show, and the cesareans are even worse. Cesareans, watch one if you think a cesarean is a simple little twist of a knife. Watch a cesarean when your guts are hanging out on your lower abdomen all over the place. It is a major surgery. Now, if you can pay attention to all these things, you have a very good chance of having a very easy birth and a powerhouse like Rachel did. Now, once that child's born, it's not done. That's when it begins. And that's sort of a surprise to a lot of people. You'll lose sleep. You have to heal the scars. You may have a baby already or two already. Now you have three. But in the time remaining, I just want to mention a perspective on the child's health that started when sperm met egg, that started before sperm met egg. And if you're not familiar with a Freudian perception of childhood, I want to introduce one lightly now. In the remaining time, the child's health was composed from birth of four stages: oral, anal, edipal, and post-edipal. And the oral stage had much to do with learning that its lips, its mouth, was functionally alive and a source of pleasure. In other words, that the child would learn that it's good to suck on the nipple of the mom. Right there, volumes of wisdom behind the notion of breastfeeding. Not just from we need the mother's milk, and if we don't get the mother's milk, we can just go get milk and feed it to the kid through some form of an artificial nipple, so on and so forth. Yeah, you got to do that if you can't get your own milk. But there's great significance to how the child's developing through its nervous system when it can relax behind the pleasure of sucking. In other words, the orifice in the mouth had to be conditioned to pleasure all the way then to what? The anal stage, where the orifice on the other end had to be conditioned to the point of pleasure. So the child's digestive tract, which is the child's second brain. Think about that. Now get this hook up. All the shows I've done on digestion, all the claims I've made that all the IBS and Crohn's and irritable bowel syndrome and ulcerative colitises and this and that and the other thing are really about people who, when they ingest food, go into autonomic distress, autonomic imbalance, sympathetic, dominant, and inflammatory condition, and that creates all sorts of autoimmune responses and failure to thrive and so on and so forth. And that this tube from mouth to anus is what we call the second brain. the second brain, because it has so much neural investiture. And that Freud, from the onset, and his work carried on by Bale as it relates to the child even before birth, from the mouth to the anus, the child has to be configured by the mom, by the relationship with the mom, to understand both mouth and anus as a source of pleasure. In other words, it feels good to suck and it feels good to defecate. And think of all the problems today, because that doesn't happen. Because for different reasons, people don't have pleasure during the bowel movement. They lost that step in development in the first year or two of life. Fascinating. It's a show in itself. All the causes of psychogenic constipation. People that as adults still can't go because when they were that young, the anus never became a source of pleasure. That's what we call potty training. Some kids, when they have to go to the bathroom, fall into the toilet bowl because mom's not there. What does that mean? It means when you crap, you drown. Oh, pardon me, I'm not supposed to say that word. It means when you defecate, you might drown in the toilet bowl. I know cases of people like that. And some people, when they begin to defecate, their parents throw them a birthday party, a party. You have a defecation party. Everyone claps, and you look at it, and everyone thinks it's a wonderful creation, and the kid's showing it to everybody and her friends and et cetera, et cetera. Look at the span on that. And the same thing with the other end, the mouth. Some mothers love to breastfeed. And some moms, the minute that kid bites the nipple and it hurts, that's the end of it. It's pulled away. If that kid's got power, if it's born, if it's aggressive, if it's thriving, it just might crunch on that nipple, and that's painful. And without understanding, the mom may pull back and that's it. I'm done with breastfeeding and it's only been a week or two or a month. To create a pleasure reflex, orally and anally, is the whole neurological intelligence of the gastrointestinal tract. And we have only 1 minute left. I should probably continue this. I think I'll take the second half soon. Tomorrow, I start my second class, my January 8th class at the Medici Institute. Almost everybody came back. I have lots of education for them. And I have lots to say to you if you're listening, and that is check out my school. Get on the website, straighttalk.cc, because if you come to my class, I'll get you the inside track, and you'll find out really the inside part of what it takes to heal. Dr. Vincent Medici, you have a great week.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. And the best part? You can call in live with your health questions every week. For those of you still holding for Dr. Medici, stay on hold. He'll continue to answer calls for as long as it takes. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. And remember, to contact his office for an appointment, call Rachel or Johanna at 310-320-1132. That's 310-320-1132. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.